Okay, Mark, are you there?
I am.
All righty, why don't we get started? Good evening and welcome to this month's National Association of Baby Boomer Women teleconference that empowers and educates women at MedLife. I'd first like to give you a little information about how the call will work this evening, and then we'll get started. For those people who are on the call, other than Mark and myself, I'd appreciate it if you would kindly hit the 6 button on your phone so we can mute all background noises. At the end of the interview, we will have some time for a few questions and answers. And then at that time, if you want to ask a question, you can simply hit 6 again. I am Betsy Bragel, the founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is www.nabbw.com. And I'm also the founder of the number one site on all search engines for baby boomer women, www.boomerwomenspeak.com. I am passionate about educating and empowering midlife women. Since launching Boomer Women Speak several years ago, I've been connecting, encouraging, and supporting boomer women on a daily basis. I dedicate a great portion of my time creating opportunities that inspire women to explore their passions and live them to the fullest. My prayer is to embrace all women and provide them with the means to soar. Now, tonight, I'd like to introduce you to our guest speaker, and his name is Mark Cornwall. Mark, it can be found online at www.babyboomerpublishing.com.
Good evening. Happy to be here.
Good to have you. Okay, Mark, I'm just going to give your little introduction, and then we'll get started. Mr. Cornwall was a trial attorney for 20 years at the same address in Santa Barbara, California, across the street from the courthouse. He realized the stress of trial work was beginning to affect his health dramatically. Since he owned his own office building, he decided to develop it into downtown condos, which freed him up to do what he had always wanted to do, and that was to be a writer. Although he had legal opinions published in both federal and state appellate courts, this was not the type of writing he had in mind. In 2003, he won the Excellence in Writing Award at the Santa Barbara Writers Conference. So after writing a novel and 4 screenplays, none of which were financially rewarding, his wife gently lured him back to legal writing, beginning with an estate plan. He had a plan prepared by a specialist in the field, but when he sat down to read it, he discovered that out of the 78 million baby boomers in America, unless they specialize in the subject, they don't have a chance of understanding what they are signing. After all, he didn't know what a bypass, Q-tip, disclaimer, or survivor's trust were, so how would anyone else? Therefore, he refused to sign the living trust and spent the next year researching everything from legal treaties to continuing education of the bar seminars and interviewing with IRS attorneys. He then spent another year figuring out the simplest way of putting into the words everything a baby boomer should know about estate planning before talking to an attorney. Ladies, as Mr. Cornwall puts it, it is the newest approach to estate planning. Know what you are talking about first. So welcome again to the call. And what I'd like to say about the book, which is called Everything a Baby Boomer Should Know, An Insider's Guide to Estate Planning, can also be found on his website and also at Amazon.com. There are a lot of things that you need to know before you consult with an attorney. No one of the baby boomer age, with the exception of the attorneys and CPAs and financial advisors, have been taught anything about death and inheritance and the system it functions in. So it's guaranteed you will not understand the terms and conditions of the language used in someone else's will, let alone be certain your own will or living trust obtains the goals you wanted to achieve. Now, I know myself, you know, I'm at midlife. My husband and I did a will when our children were younger, and after reading Mark's book and preparing for this interview, I realized it's time for me to do something different. And a few of the things that Mark talks about is why people finally do something about their estate plan. And what we hope this evening is that if, you know, nothing else happens after the call, you will at least begin to make a move in the right direction. And if you've already done some preparation, that you would continue to do more that would be up to date. So some of the reasons that people finally do something about their estate plan are, the first one is a loved one has died and you're going to receive an inheritance, but you realize you've never been taught anything about how the death and inheritance system works. And, Mark, if you want to speak a little about that, I can just share.
Yeah, that is really the number one, because all of a sudden you're caught off guard since no one else is ever talking about death and inheritance. You haven't the slightest idea what to do. Now all of a sudden, let's say you're going to inherit $50,000 or $100,000 or even less or more. Who cares? The fact of the matter is you want to know what happens next, and you start looking for information. And what I've found is that the people that that latch on to this book first are the ones that are caught in that situation. In other words, taken completely unawares. And they need to have information, and they need to have it now in order to try and figure out what steps to take next.
Right. And I have to say, from a personal standpoint, my mother-in-law died just about a year ago. And I know this has been a year for us to learn exactly what you're talking about, because you know, it's all terminology we had heard in the past, but unless you experience it firsthand, we were pretty clueless. So another thing, go ahead, Mark.
And the other part of that is, like, you'd use the term bypass trust. The other problem is that they call a bypass trust a lot of different names. Even though I live in California, they call it by a lot of different, the B trust or the credit shelter trust and a few other things, and I'm sure they do in other states, and it makes it confusing. But the most modern way of speaking about the bypass trust is the bypass trust.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm sure of.
Okay. Another reason you say is that some old friends have died recently, and for the first time you realize your own mortality. And I think that's definitely something that's happened with the boomers, as we see our parents' generation passing on before us. We start to think about, oh my gracious, what's going to happen when we die?
Yeah, well, my own experience was that three of my, at one point, one of these three people had been one of my best friends, and they all died within a month. And the effect that it had on me, I wouldn't have believed, but it really all comes down to realizing your mortality, that there will come an end, and once you, depending on your age, I'm 56, and what you put together over the last 30 or 40 years, you can give a real gift to your family by putting things in order.
Right. And that's, you know, what we want to accomplish with this call. You would like the peace of mind that comes with putting your spouse at ease and your estate in order. So
Yeah, and not just that. It's that when somebody dies, and there's any a certain amount of money involved, it is inevitable that there people come out of the woodwork you haven't seen in a long time. They say there's always two things that are the vehicles of fraud. One is divorce, and the other is death.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, and one of the things that you mention in your book is that the best gift that you can leave your loved ones is the gift of this preparedness, so that when it happens, they're prepared and they can pretty much just walk through what you've done prior to leaving this earth. So, I mean, it's interesting because we spend almost our whole life working very hard and, you know, trying to save money for our loved ones for when we're gone. And then yet we spend no time deciding what happens with our hard-earned money and our belongings.
Yeah, that never fails to amaze me. Mm-hmm. Spend 40 or 50 years working and accumulating things, but not want to spend more than a couple of hours putting together a living trust or whatever it may be, a will, mm-hmm. but that may or may not distribute things according to your own wishes. The whole idea of this book is to get you to understand the tools that are available to you, so that your property or of your estate will go to exactly the person you want it to go to, or the group, or the charity, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and you know, in addition to money and property are a lot of personal belongings. And I know we used to laugh at my mother-in-law, because whenever somebody said they liked something in her house, she would tape a note under it for who got it when she died. And we used to laugh about it. But it really, you know, looking back, it really makes sense. Because why not?
I mean,
you know, why not have someone who admires your things have it when you're gone?
I couldn't agree with you more. And if that is all laid out, it takes all the confusion out of the sadness and the anxiety and frustration that everyone's going through anyway as a result of you being gone. It may just be that you were the one person that kind of held everything together. And with you gone,
mm-hmm.
There gets to be a lot of infighting. And my book particularly tries to, I try to delve a little more deeply into the blended family. That means people who've been married once, been twice, maybe three times. They have children from a previous marriage,
mm-hmm.
and then they have young children that perhaps they share with a new wife, and that complicates things enormously. If you try to rely on the old rules,
sure. And Mark, I'd like you to talk a little bit about that. But before we get into talking about the blended families, I would really appreciate it if you could just define some terms that you throw around and lawyers throw around, and just so that, you know, when the time comes for us to go and speak with a lawyer, we can speak intelligently. Mm-hmm. And I'd also just like to say that if you visit Mark's site, which is babyboomerpublishing.com. He has a lot of information on the site, and you can get a pretty good idea of what the book's about by looking at the site. And he mentions what's in a lot of the different chapters, et cetera. And I'd also like to say that I like the format of his book, because it's not the type of book that you have to read cover to cover. You can flip through, and by looking at the table of contents, just see, you know, what part really pertains to you at that point in time. So anyway, I just thought I would mention that. It's an easy format. And then in the back, he's got a great appendix and actually questionnaires. And throughout the book, there are different charts, like the one that you'll see on the homepage of his site. They're similar to that anyway.
That that is the idea, because everybody has different interests,
mm-hmm.
or they are in a different situation. And so you can thumb through the book till you find something that strikes home with you, and that will lead you to the next thing you need to know, because it's all interconnected.
Yeah, it
really
seems like
it. You may end up reading the whole book, but you're not going to start until you find something that that really strikes home with you.
Yeah, and like you said, every situation is different. Okay, let's just define some terms, and I'll throw these out, and you, if you just want to give us a good definition, that would be great. Living trust.
Well, there's a big one. let me say this, first of all. You hear an awful lot about a living trust, and some people believe that a living trust is like a cookie cutter. And you can just have one, and it says certain things, and it takes care of every situation for every family. Now, nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, first of all, a living trust has to have a pour-over will. And what a pour, but to answer your question, a living trust, it means that a man and woman have, a husband and wife have put together, have documented their estate. They have acknowledged who owns what normally, and then made a decision as to how that is going to be distributed when they die. But it has to have a pour-over will that goes with it. Now, because what you have to do, for example, one example would be if you have a living trust, you have to transfer your house, if you own the house, into the trust. Now, if you don't do that, there's no use having a living trust. I mean, you have to, if it's called the Jones Family Trust, you simply go to the recordation office and you change it to the Jones Family Trust. It's a simple thing to do, but if you don't do it, you'll be right back in probate court. No one ever tells you that. But the other thing is you need a pour-over will. A pour-over will means okay, you only have your living trust reviewed once every 5 years, which brings up another big subject, and that is that they're going to completely revamp the estate trust or the estate tax system in the year 2010. So there'd be a good time to have your trust reviewed. But it picks up everything that maybe you purchased or accumulated since you signed or executed your living trust.
Okay, and so that's the will.
The pour-over will take all that stuff and it'll put it in your trust.
Okay.
For you. So.
Okay, and actually, you know, while you're talking, I'm thinking a lot of us are doing this for ourselves, but I would think there are many baby boomers who are also encouraging their parents to do the same thing if they haven't.
It's getting like that every single day. Unbelievably, in the last 2 days, two people have died. I happen to be trustee of a person. His caregiver died. The caregiver died before he died. And then the next door neighbor died, on the very next day, and they're both older folks, and naturally the children have to move in, and how prepared they were to manage what happens next depends on whether they read the book or not.
Right. Well. And just let me ask this question while we're talking about this. What happens if you die without a will?
Well, then it goes into intestate succession. So that's another way of saying the government has a will for you.
Okay.
And that will, or intestate succession, is very, very old-fashioned, meaning it's your leave it to beaver type of will, where the mother and father, the father's going to die first. Everything's going to get transferred to the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the mother dies, it's going to go to the two sons.
Okay.
And that's basically what will happen. The problem these days is that there's too many other people involved.
Well, that's what I'm thinking as far as the blended families, because I think like 60% of us are from blended families, so I would think it could get very confusing.
Well, particularly, if a person was very wealthy, let's say, and will just be, for practical purposes, old-fashioned, and will say the man dies first, and regardless of his wealth, if he does not have a living trust or a will explaining what to do, it's all. But he had only been married to a new person for 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
that person is going to get 2/3 of everything.
Well, you know what? I read that in your book, and I just thought, oh, my gracious. I mean, I'm sure this happens day in
it
and day out.
It happens all the time, and it's a big surprise.
Yeah,
to,
and then what happens to his children from his first marriage, you know? So we'll have to talk about that when we get to blended families.
Mm-hmm.
But just to get back to a couple more terms, can you define the difference between estate planning and financial planning?
Yes, very much so, because in estate planning, that's done by an attorney. Most normally, that's the only person that's going to do estate planning for you. A financial advisor will say that they're doing estate planning for you, but what you're paying for there is two different things.
Mm-hmm.
An attorney, you're paying for his services to listen to your situation, to understand what it is you want to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
and then he prepares the documents that make that happen. Financial advisors, for the most part, end up selling insurance.
Oh, okay.
And there's a certain they have a certain self-interest involved. Not that that's a bad thing. When you need financial advice and you need insurance, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's a great mm-hmm. thing. But there is a difference.
Okay, and so that financial planning is preparing for like insurance settlements and that type of thing.
What financial planning is it should be how you're going to make your money.
Okay.
It's not how you're going to distribute the money after you die.
Okay. All right. Then a couple other terms, and then we can move on to what happens in a blended family and a few other things.
Mm-hmm.
Executor of estate. You want to talk to us a little bit about who that should be? Or?
Well, I think that that's a real interesting situation. Whether it's executor of an estate, in which case you'd be talking a will,
mm-hmm.
or you would be talking a trustee if you're talking about a living trust.
Mm-hmm.
In a will, the executor, the person writing the will, the testator, usually picks somebody. To maybe it's their wife even, but let's say their wife has died too or something, they pick somebody to execute the will.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that person goes and hires an attorney
mm-hmm.
who takes the will through probate and then hopefully helps the attorney with the family affairs. But what most people don't understand, and this is a bad rap for attorneys, and that is that attorneys get their fees get statutory fees, meaning the larger the estate, they get a certain percent. Okay,
mm-hmm.
whether it's 1% or 4% or whatever it may be, but the executor of a will gets the exact same amount of money. And as we were speaking earlier, I said I've read many books that say, well, the executor often waives their fee. I've never met one.
Okay.
I have always seen the executor always takes their fee.
Okay.
And so, it's not, that's why probate is so expensive,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Now, so basically, the executor of the estate, now, do you have to hire a lawyer if it's not a big estate? I mean, is it possible that a person could just make sure that the money and
if
you
it's
know?
Under $100,000 in California,
mm-hmm.
now, I have to say that because, you know, every state has their little quirks.
Right.
It's not unified, but where that point would be, but in
mm-hmm.
say like in California, if your estate is less than $100,000 or less, you don't have to go into probate.
Okay. Okay, how about, do you have anything else to say about that?
No, the only other side of it is that the trustee, as far as a living trust is concerned, the only way a trust works is you really have to have somebody you can trust.
Right.
And because, understand this, a living trust is not being watched by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
There is no judge, there's no bailiff, no anything. There's no ombudsman or anybody watching what's going on. Property is simply dispersed on a kind of an honor system.
Mm-hmm.
If a person does not have somebody they believe they can really trust, I don't suggest a living trust.
That's a great point.
I suggest that they go ahead and put it through the system, which is, yes, it is more expensive, but the question is, do you want it done exactly the way you made it, or do you want to give somebody that perhaps is not quite as trustworthy a chance to do what they want with it?
Right. That's interesting. I never really thought about that before.
Yeah.
I mean, because basically what you want to do, I mean, I don't know, your estate and what you leave is, and how you leave it in your living trust or your will or whatever, is basically your last chance to speak, you know. And it's interesting when someone dies and you hear, you know, who they're leaving what, it really speaks loudly to the life they lived. Whether it's they're leaving it to family or, you know, the SPCA or whatever it may be, it really, you put your money where your mouth is.
And besides that, think of so many situations where after a person dies, it goes into a trust where perhaps it is what they call a family pot trust.
Right.
And it goes to children.
Mm-hmm.
There's three children. Okay, there has to be a trustee of that trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think what you're doing with that trustee. That trustee has to basically step into your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
They have the children coming to them. One of them thinks that they need a trip around the world
mm-hmm.
in order to educate themselves. Another thinks that they need machinery to open up a machine shop. I mean, where does the money go?
Right.
And the trustee will have to make that decision, and every dollar that goes to one child doesn't go to any other child. So,
that's the way it's set up before they die. They don't say, you know, I want it to be divided equally among.
In that particular kind of trust, the family pot trust, that's the way it is.
Okay.
Otherwise, you can set it up any way you want.
Right.
I mean,
okay.
You can say you get it three times, you know. Popularly, it's at 20, 26, and 30 or something like that.
Right.
But it seems like the older you get, if you have a lot of money, you really wouldn't want to give it to your child till they were about 40 years old.
Well, that's the other thing that I think that's worth mentioning is that, you know, some people will set stipulations where, you know, they may have X amount of dollars at 18, they may have
mm-hmm.
such and such at 25, such and such at 30, and then at 40, and that's just the way it is. So, and I think that's a smart way to go because,
I do too. I think that's I'm working with a lady now, and we're going through that, and when you get through the practicalities of trying to meet everyone's needs, you just can't do it.
Right.
You just split it into parts and give it at a certain age.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when I was younger, I knew, someone who had that type of trust, and I thought, oh, that is so ridiculous. Why can't they just have their money if it's theirs to spend? But now that I'm older and I look back and, you know, older and wiser, and you see, I certainly understand why they shouldn't be given that lump sum of money at
that
one point in
sure.
time, you know? Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's move on. And
and don't forget, you can always go back and change it. That's why it's a revocable trust.
While you're living, you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd have a tough time if you were dead.
Right.
But that's why the living trust has gotten so popular.
Okay.
Because you can change it as you change your mind.
Yeah, okay. Why don't you address the blended families and some of the trusts that you're familiar with? Because, you know, we mentioned earlier how someone, I mean, just an example is,
let's say we start with the living trust, and that standard living trust where it would be the same as the will we talked about earlier.
Right.
Where, the husband dies, the money goes to the wife, and when the wife provides for the children, and when the wife dies, the money is left to the two sons.
Okay.
Okay, that's fine. Now, let's say, though, that the man had been married 20 years earlier, and he has a daughter or son, and he wants to provide for her, of course. As much as he does, maybe he has a new child now with a new person. But the point here is how are you going to ensure that child who's 20 years older lives in another state or whatever it may be gets part of their inheritance. Well, there are two tools there. The most popular being the bypass trust, and that would mean that when the man died, let's say the husband did die, that the money would there would be half the estate would of course go to the woman. This is where you really have to make a difference of whose property, who owns what. If you're in a separate property state, it's a matter of who owns the property. It decides who gets to give away what. If you live in a community property state, even half the community property is yours to give away to whomever you want.
Okay, can you explain the difference between those two, the community proper state and, I mean, because I don't even know what Maryland is, and I live in Maryland, so I have some homework. But if you could tell us.
You really do, because the difference is that when you, in a community property estate, which I will say is the minority of states. It's actually only, I think, 8-9 community property states.
Okay.
But this is how you determine the income. Okay. It's not how it doesn't necessarily apply to the what we're talking about, which is the estate tax law. But when it comes to the income, everything is split 50-50, okay? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if the woman makes $10,000 a year and the man makes $2 million a year. It's split 50-50.
Okay.
In other states, I can't say for Maryland, you know. I really don't know. But in Texas, if she makes $10,000, she's got $10,000. And the man's got $2 million. That's quite a difference.
Sure.
So you want to make certain that this is why open communication with your husband and wife and talking about property and whose property is what, and these are tough conversations for some people to have, but it is absolutely necessary when it comes to estate planning.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes say a wife might simply assume that, let's say they don't have any children.
Mm-hmm.
She might simply assume that her husband wants everything to go to her niece, you know, because
right.
that's the only real relative they have that,
mm-hmm.
that's beneath them. While in the husband's mind, that might be the furthest thing from his mind, you know.
Right.
He might want his property to go someplace else.
Sure.
And unless you speak and communicate with each other on those terms as to who, where you want the money to go, and how you want it to get to these people distributed. That it's the only way it's not going to run into problems, you know. And
mm-hmm.
it's the only way it's going to come out clear on the in the distribution. I mean, otherwise, this is why people sometimes need two attorneys,
mm-hmm.
you know. And but I'll tell you, if a couple needs two attorneys just to do a living trust, or a will, that's not a good sign.
Right. Something wasn't done well in the first place, it sounds like.
You know, it already means there's a division in there that it could conceivably cause trouble, but not necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Could just be that that's the way they like to keep things.
Speaking right.
A woman yesterday, she says, you know, she and her husband simply like to keep things separate.
Yeah, I know. I know, you know, good friends of ours who keep all of their money separate. And,
yeah.
you know, she pays for certain things and he pays for certain
exactly.
things, and they've done it their whole life, and it'll be interesting to see, not that I'll ever find out, but what they would do with, you know, their will.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it really is. You can probably be certain that they both want to do two different things.
I would think so. Right.
So that they That's why you have to be real clear, very,
mm-hmm.
very clear. And this is where an attorney can help,
mm-hmm.
because that can get to be an emotional issue.
Right.
And an attorney can help by bringing a certain amount of professionalism in on the scene,
mm-hmm.
and simply saying, look, here is the law of this particular state that you're in. Therefore, you know, this is separate property, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to accept that. You know, now what you're going to do with it,
right,
is something else. But
sure.
But deciding who actually owns what is an issue that has to be addressed. Probably the toughest issue.
Mm-hmm. And don't you have, like, a questionnaire in the back of your book to kind
I
of
do.
Sort those things out?
I
yeah.
do.
Yeah, and I would
and,
think...
And I think that is, that's your very first step, because you've got to be able to sit down at a table, and you've got to be able to go through that questionnaire
mm-hmm.
and answer the questions, and it stimulates thought and various things that... that go into distributing property, and including who the people are that you trust, who you would want as a trustee, you know, who you would want as a guardian.
Sure,
it's two different types of people.
Yeah, know? And I really think that just doing that questionnaire would save you time and money when you go to, you know, meet with a lawyer. I mean, if you go to a lawyer and you have all those things figured out already, I'm sure you're saving the hourly legal fee.
You are saving so much money.
Right.
It is amazing. But the main thing is you're making sure you're getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, it really appears to me, that prefer to be told mm-hmm. how their estate should be distributed, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. Rather than go through the mechanics of deciding how to distribute the estate.
Right.
Well, that's fine, too, for them, but if you care about certain things and certain people, and you want to make sure that it ends up in their hands and not somebody else's, you need to get all that worked out before you go to the attorney, because what he'll do is he will just do the same thing he or she has been doing for the last 20 or 30 years, and then
right.
you'll come out of it saying, "There, I just." Now my estate is in order, and in fact, it's the last thing he wants. You know, what you didn't want to go to your niece or nephew is going right there.
Right. Well, let me just ask. I remember reading something about a Q-tip trust that had to do with blended families. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that now. Here's the difference between a bypass trust and a Q-tip trust.
Okay.
A bypass trust is let's say the husband dies again. Mm-hmm. Immediately, that turns the living trust into the wife's. It's called the survivor's trust.
Okay.
Okay. Or if the wife died, it would be the man's survivor.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say it's the woman. Okay, immediately she has the survivor's trust. The man's side goes into the bypass trust. Now, what they can do prior to him dying or before they execute this is they can decide who that money is going to go to.
Okay.
It's called mm-hmm. the power of appointment. They can do that, and let's say it would go to their children, or let's say a fourth of it would go to his child from 20 years before, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in a bypass trust, the wife would normally have the power to invade the corpus of the trust, meaning the property that's in the trust, whether it's stocks, bonds, or a house, or rents, or whatever it is, cars, that they would have the ability to go in there and take those assets and use them for their health care and maintenance.
Oh, okay.
Now, you can see where the problem is. If she goes in there and uses up all of the assets, there's not too much left, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you avoid that happening is you would take that money that you wanted to make sure went to the child of 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and you would put it into a Q-tip trust, and that just happens to stand for Qualified Terminable Interest Trust.
Oh, okay.
If that means anything, but that's what it means.
Okay.
What that means is if it was stocks or something that generated revenue,
mm-hmm.
that would go to the wife, but it would positively, she could not get into the property.
Okay.
Okay.
So that protects the children, like
it protects the child's interest in that money or that property or whatever it is.
Okay.
So that for sure it will be there when it comes time for them to get it.
Okay. All right.
So it's really in its most simple form is the basic difference between the two. Otherwise, you start as you start getting into more money,
mm-hmm.
and like for example in this year, in 2007 and 2008, the exemption, the estate tax exemption, is $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So if your estate is under $2 million, you're not going to pay any taxes.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's for those people whose estate is over that, and that's per person.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that's why in the book I use the example of the bonanza thing there, but where it works out equally. The woman gets $2 million and the man gets $2 million. Well, you know, here's how you save your wife $920,000.
Mm-hmm.
You put it into a bypass trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way she doesn't have $4 million when she dies and get taxed on $2 million of it.
Okay. Okay, let's see.
46%, I might add.
And that's all about paying. I mean, that's like paying tax on money that you've already paid tax on is basically.
That is the, you know, one of the worst parts.
Right.
That's in many cases, that's earned income that you have already paid taxes.
Right, right. And so then after you die, people are paying taxes on that money
mm-hmm.
again, which just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, it's not fair. So it's not like you're cheating the government or anything
right.
like that.
Right.
You know.
Well, let me ask this. We only have a couple more minutes, and I wanted to know if you could speak about long-term care insurance a little bit, because I think that's something that's of interest to boomers right now. Some of us have been in situations where one of our parents has had it, and it's been wonderful to be able to fall back on. And
mm-hmm.
I'm sure some of us have been in situations where our parents do not have that long-term care insurance, and, you know, as a result, we're spending down our parents' hard-earned money
yeah.
To care for them. But
I tell you, on that issue right there,
mm-hmm.
that if they do not have the insurance,
mm-hmm.
if they have not already signed up, you know, and are paying their premiums
mm-hmm.
and paying, and then they should have it on automatic payment, because if they miss one, they're going to get shut out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But on that issue, if they have long-term insurance, then everything's going to work out okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the last statistics I heard on that was that it costs somewhere between $4,000 and $7,000 a month to keep a person in a home.
Oh, sure.
A home where that took complete care of the patients, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the average stay was about 3 years. But otherwise, what you do is you get involved with Medi-Cal,
mm-hmm.
and Medi-Cal is misperceived as something that maybe is just for poor people. There's a lot of strange rules about Medi-Cal. Like, for example, they don't count as a person's house as the part of the value to make them eligible for Medi-Cal.
Now,
otherwise, you can only be worth $2,000.
Now, is this something that is specific to your state, and does it change from state to state?
No, Medi-Cal is
national.
California, excuse me, I made a mistake.
Okay.
Medi-Cal is in California.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Medicaid is every place else.
Right, okay, all right. That's what I was a little confused there. Yeah.
But what they do is you would, in order to approach that subject correctly,
mm-hmm.
you would want to go to the office and get some literature
mm-hmm.
and begin setting things up in that fashion that is going to make them eligible. Because what's going to happen is, remember, Medicaid is a loan from the government.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a handout. It is a loan. They come back at the end once the parents die, and then they take the money from the estate.
Hmm.
Of course, there are some very clever lawyers out there that can somehow are able to make that not happen. You know? But generally speaking, that's the idea right there. And you need you need that. You need that money. You need that help right there. And if they take it out of the estate at the end, so be it. At least you're able, everyone's able to function along with their life as it is right now. And
okay.
If they don't have the estate at the end to pay for it, they don't come after you. You know,
right, they don't hit the next person in line.
Yeah, they don't come after somebody else. They just take the loss, you know.
Right.
So.
Well, how about from our perspective, when is a good time to buy long-term care insurance? Do you know? I mean, is it something
really
that we should?
It really depends on your health.
Right.
If right now, like I said. I'm 56 years old, but I have a pacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way I'm getting long-term insurance.
They won't sell it to you.
No.
Right, right.
I simply am ineligible.
And isn't that a shame?
They made that very clear very fast.
Right, right.
So if you have some ailment like that or something going on, you're not going to get it. Now, but either that means if you're healthy and you're in your 50s, that would be a good time to get it.
Okay, well, that's what I was thinking. Before these conditions occur, you should get it. And because once you have it, they can't deny you.
Exactly.
Right, okay, okay.
That's exactly right.
Is there anything else you want to share? We have just a few more minutes about, like...
There's just one thing I'd like to share, and that is in that living trust, one of the best benefits that you get out of it is you get to name who your conservator will be should something happen to you.
Right.
Or should you become incapacitated and not capable of taking care of your affairs. Because if you do not name that person that you want, then some family member or somebody will go into court, take you into court, and you will have your lucid days, and you will know what's going on. And it's really a sad situation because there are a lot of people that are, depending, of course, on how much money you have, trying to get their hands on your estate,
right?
And you can just eliminate that through a living trust. And if for no other reason, that would be a great one for getting a living trust.
Okay, okay. Does anyone have any questions? I think we've pretty much covered everything. Okay. Again, I would just like to thank Mark for being on the call.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and that's Mark Cornwall, and he wrote the book, Everything a Baby Boomer Should Know Before Talking to an Attorney, and it's an insider's guide to estate planning. And his hope in writing the book is just an awareness of the issues so that people think ahead and plan for their futures. And you can find his book on Amazon or at babyboomerpublishing.com. And again, I'm Dotsie Bragel from the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is www.nabbw.com, and Boomer Women Speak, which is www.boomerwomenspeak.com, and that's the number one site on all search engines for quote-unquote baby boomer women. We just want to say thank you for listening, and if you have any questions, you can feel free to email either of us through our site. So, again, thanks, Mark, and we'll remain
thank
in
you.
Touch, I'm sure.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.